Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Analyst, also dabbles in national recruiting. Tiger Blueprint, he's one of the founders over there. But we bring him on via the phone line right this second. Hitman, what's happening, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there, man. I'm hanging in there. There's a lot of things to discuss when it comes to Memphis basketball recruiting. Like, it's all over the place. I saw a PJ Carter Instagram story. We have PJ Haggerty still involved. The PJs are, you know, they're leaving the door open, it feels like. But I want to start with you on the roster that's already been put together. What they have right this second, let's exclude Dane Danger. Aaron Bradshaw, Doug McDaniel, Sincere Parker, Julius Thedford, guys like that, the guys that they have replenished this roster with. What do you feel about this particular roster as it stands right this second?
I'm really pleased with their guards. I was talking to multiple people around the program. They feel they share the same sentiment as well. Really pleased with their guards that they have right now. They got Doug at the one. You can have Thedford, Sincere at the two. You got Dante Harris backing up that one. You've got some young guys too, and Patino and Vieira Tuck. Probably won't see that many minutes this year, but definitely some good pieces down the road. So the backcourt's really good. Wings, they've got Zach Davis at the three. They don't really have any other wings outside of that. I mean, that's one of the pieces I expect for them to acquire in the next few days. They've got the four. I mean, you've got Ashton Hardaway. He'll probably play pick and pop four a little bit. And their front court is also Sen. So wing in the front court, I mean, they've got Bradshaw can play the four and five. I know he wanted – at Kentucky, he wanted to be a four, but I think in college he's going to be more of a five. That's where he's going to fit best. And then I think in the pros he's going to probably forecast to be a five.
Yeah, so, Bradshaw is interesting.
Front court wing. Yeah, Bradshaw is.
Yeah, because at Kentucky and Ohio State, not great production, but we know the talent that he has coming out of high school, McDonald's All-American five-star guy. He can stretch out to the three-point line. He can do some different things that we haven't really seen the type of skill set at that size under Penny Hardaway's sort of tutelage, his tenure.
Exactly. There hasn't been really a five outside of James Wiseman that can shoot it as well as he can. Obviously, the numbers weren't exactly the best. I mean, he was dealing with injuries. There's also some off-court baggage that comes with him. That's why his recruitment wasn't really buzzing when he hit the portal. I'm not going to get into specifics of that, but there is some baggage you're getting with him. So I think some of it's public. There's allegations of around like sexual assault. There's other allegations as well, but I'm not sure how true those are. I just know there's baggage that came with it and scared off a lot of other schools. But the talent is definitely there. He's just got to stay healthy and stay out of his own way.
All right, now you have to break this down for me because this is the big topic. John Martin wrote a story for the Daily Memphian about P.J. Haggerty and a potential return to Memphis because that seems to be on the table. There's other schools involved, of course. They can seemingly offer more money. Memphis's offer, according to Hughes, right around that two and a half $3 million mark. Take me through the re-recruitment of P.J. Haggerty and how that looks right now as we sit here on a Wednesday.
So Memphis is at three. They're at $3 million right now for Haggerty. NC State is in there. They're going to keep all their stuff really quiet. That's how Slater and Wade like to run their stuff. So I don't expect anything, any numbers to get out about that. But Ole Miss, they're at three and a half right now. And they do have the funds to get up to four if needed. They've got a lot of money committed. I don't know how much of it they have on hand, but they have more than four committed for them left to spend on the rest of this roster. And before they added that French guard, they were looking to add at least two guards. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where things stand. In terms of Memphis, they're not pushing for Haggerty to come back as much as fans would like. I put this out on Twitter, but they're pleased with who they have in the backcourt right now. Although they would welcome a return for PJ, they're not really pushing for it, if that makes sense.
Right.
Again, I mean, they kind of have a similar guy in Sincere Parker for about eighth of the price. So.
And yeah, and also, like, the timing of this whole thing matters to them. We know Penny likes to get he wants to going forward, and he did this last offseason. He got about his whole roster on campus by June, and they were all together. And yeah, that's why you probably saw the better results you saw this year, 29 wins, 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. Like, when it comes to timing, like, In your estimation behind the scenes, is there a timing aspect in their conversations back and forth with P.J. Haggerty? Hey, we probably need to get this done sooner rather than later. Are you going to be able to give us an answer sooner?
And, yeah, there's no exact timetable for that. I know P.J. wants to go through the process. That's been his plan all along. P.J. and his people, my opinion, they misplayed the entire situation. They think he has more draft stock than he really has.
Sure.
They're going to go through the full NBA draft process, going through workouts right now with teams and get feedback from that. But he's been in D.C. Washington D.C. the past few weeks, training up, getting ready for all the NBA draft workouts that are going to be happening these next few weeks. But that timetable factor has definitely pushed Memphis to kind of abandon building a team around him and more so getting guys that they need to compete with next season, whether they have Haggerty or not. They've definitely done that in the backcourt.
When it comes to PJ, when we got the original sort of shout from Jeff Goodman at Field of 68, it was $4 million. And, you know, a role as a point guard, an on-ball point guard. And he did a little bit of that last year, but we know Tyrese Hunter was really the floor general for this Memphis team. How did you view that demand, if you will, like being an on-ball point guard? Like, is that something that, you know, schools around the country that are interested in PJ are willing to do for him, or do you think that the role that he had last year is the same type of role he'll have anywhere he plays?
Yeah, that's a good question. First I want to say, though, his people were telling teams that they had a $5 million committable offer on the table, and their original asking price was up to $5 million. So when I saw that Goodman report, told me all I needed to know. They significantly dropped their
right.
demands. But the point guard demand was new for me. I hadn't heard that yet. And it's interesting because the people I've talked to, pro scouts, the same guys I've gathered, pretty much a good feel about his NBA draft stock, which I don't think there is that much. They have shooting concerns and athleticism concerns with him, but with PJ, I don't think he's a point guard. I think he's a two, and that point guard demand has scared off a lot of teams. I mean, Kansas, Baylor, Florida, LSU was recently in contact with him. They're either scared off by the asking price or the point guard demand. So
right.
He's really limited his number of suitors available just with those two demands alone.
Well, and that's, you know, that was always the issue I had with that particular demand, is just looking at it. If there is a college basketball coach or NIL fund that's going to offer you $4 to $5 million, they're not offering you $4 to $5 million to play a role that they don't foresee their team succeeding with. They want to bring you in to be a bucket getter. That's what he is. like you said, at the two, being more off ball, that type of thing. You don't pay that type of money at the college level to experiment, right? You know, exactly. I don't think there's a lot of coaches that are willing to pay that type of money to help boost somebody's NBA draft stock. They're looking to boost their team stock when it comes to NCAA tournament seeding and everything else.
Exactly. They're looking to win, and one of those demands has really turned off a lot of teams in the portal. I mean, he doesn't really have many suitors that are willing to meet both of those demands. I don't think I mean, Ole Miss is probably the closest one to that. I mean, they don't really have many guards in the backcourt right now, so they definitely have an open point guard role for him. So it's going to come down to what PJ wants. Does he want to, you know, stay at a level like Memphis where he knows he can succeed? It's a really a safe option for him. He's going to get what he wanted. He's going to continue to build upon his All-American season, or he can take a risk, go somewhere else for, you know, $500K to $1 million more. And I mean, he's going to take a risk, and things might not pan out well for him at that level. I mean, he's got athleticism concerns and shooting concerns from the people I've talked to. So
yeah. Now, I guess I'll give you like a 1 through 10 rating system and a confidence level that he could return to Memphis. Like, where are you at when it comes to confidence level that he's actually going to field the idea of returning to Memphis? Because I think that's what fans really want to know at this point with all of the information out there.
I don't know if I can put a number on it, but I would say it's definitely unlikely.
Okay.
I'd say it's if I were a betting man, I'd bet against it right now at this moment. But, I mean, it really depends on – because I do know his agent. It's not – well, he calls his agent his advisor as well. Marcus King, he's the one that's really helping him out. And then PJ Haggerty's dad is the kind of the decision maker in all of this. And I know they're going to take their time with everything. They're going to do their due diligence. You know, have teams, have they fulfilled their promises to recruits that they've recruited in the past? That's going to be a big factor. You know, what kind of pieces are around Haggerty if he would commit to those teams? Those are definitely factors they're considering. So they're going to take their time with all this. And Memphis, like I said before, I mean, they can't really wait. So,
yeah.
I mean, they did what they could and built their backcourt the way they wanted to.
How do you feel about the agency space right now? I'm not trying to single out P.J. Haggerty or Dane Danger, whoever the Tigers are going after right this second. But how do you feel about where the agency space is around the country, whether it be football, basketball, and otherwise? Just feels like there's a lot of, you know, the Nico Iamaleava situation. He didn't have an agent. But there's a lot of different examples around the country where it feels like agencies and agents are swaying guys into decisions that probably shouldn't be made. But what do you think about that space right now and sort of where it's at?
I think it's a really, in terms of market share for agencies, I do think it's a really competitive space right now. But, you know, in terms of the fan perspective, there's a lot of guys around these kids that call themselves agents or advisors that don't really have the best interest in mind for these kids. I mean, there's multiple guys I've talked to this season who have signed with an agent, got rid of them because they were trying to push them to a school that they had interest in, or they were trying to get a job off these kids. I mean, there were two guys last year, and I'm not going to name names, but they tried to get jobs off the kids that they were pushing towards these
schools.
So it's like, it is nasty. And then there's other people, you know, who have money on the sole front of their mind that are taking 15-20% off the top of these NIL deals that the kids were going to get anyways. So
right.
It's just like, I mean, it's not, I don't think any of, I do think there are some agents out there with genuine intentions, but
sure.
The majority of these agents, I mean, it's a it's a clown show. There
you
go.
Yeah. Hey, man, my biggest issue is there is the NCAA certification that you can go get, but there's no reason for these agents to actually jump through those hoops. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like, you know, based on professional sports, the way agencies work, you have to go to seminars, you have to pass a test every year. College agents don't have to do that. It's a predatory space. Like, that's how I feel about it right now. I'm not saying every single agent is predatory, but it feels like it can be a highly predatory space, and the NCAA has no oversight of it.
100%. If I'm being honest, I mean, this agency space has been around since the early 2000s, when the 1990s, when they were paying kids. I mean, these agents, these guys now known as agents, were the guys, the AU handlers.
They were the bag men.
Yeah, you're paying these guys. I mean, now they're called agents because of NIL and everything, but they're not agents. There are some reputable agencies out there that represent both pro and college clients. Those are different. But when you have the movers and shakers in the background calling themselves agents, they're not agents. They're just influencers around the kid that you have to pay off to influence that kid's decision. So.
Talking with Hitman Hoops at Hitman Hoops on X. Dane Danger in the waiver situation. What can you tell me? Obviously, the real issue here is he's played 4 years, but the first year was 3 games, and there were some academic issues at Baylor that kept him to only playing 3 games. If it was a COVID thing or a hardship waiver, it would be a different conversation. He may already have that year back, but considering it was academic, that's the way I understand it. It seems like that year is completely been nullified by the NCAA. But how should we feel about the possibility of Dane Danger being able to make it back to the University of Memphis next season?
Yeah, I've heard mixed opinions on that from people I've talked to. So Memphis, the staff, they're optimistic in the fact that they're hopeful, but realistically, they don't think it's going to get approved. However, I talked to coaches familiar with writing these waivers and filing them through compliance. They told me it really depends on how it's written. So there's a lot of guys right now that are out of eligibility that are filing mental health waivers. So take, for example, Eddie Lampkin. He's filing a mental health waiver from Syracuse, alleging that he experienced some mental health issues while he was at TCU, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he's just one example. They're not taking these mental health waivers lightly, especially with the Kyron. I think it was Kyron.
Kyron Lacy, really tough situation.
That situation, exactly. So they're not taking that lightly at all. I mean, Jonathan Pierre, he's a former Memphis guy. He's filing a mental health waiver as well. So we'll see what happens. But it mainly depends on how it was written. I don't have any intel on what was in there. I think they're gonna try to keep that as private as possible. But like I said before, I mean it depends on what angle they took upon to file this waiver.
Yeah, it's about how they're going about it. I completely understand that. But I just look around the country. I brought up two examples yesterday. Tremont Mark, he played at Houston for 3 years, and he went to Arkansas. Then he got another year at Texas, and it's like, well, he played a lot of games, more games than Dane Danger by a fair amount. Chad Baker Mazzara is another example of that. He just committed to USC. He's going on his fifth year. And it's like, well, he's played a lot more games. I know that's not the entirety of the case you have to make. You have to, file these under the hardship idea, whether it be injury or mental health, like you're saying. But if you just sort of do one-to-one comparisons for guys that have gotten waivers, some of these guys that have gotten waivers have played a lot more basketball than Dane Danger.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. I know this is kind of a very, obvious question, but how important would it be for this team to get Dane Danger back in the fold?
Oh, I mean, it's huge. Right now, the people they're talking to at the 4 and 5, I mean, I just put out one today, Elijah Gray, they're talking to him that he visited this Saturday. To down to 3 schools, Minnesota, Washington State, and Memphis. I mean, he's a 4. He's not really a 5. There's just, I was looking in the portal the other day on the database, and there's just not many 5s available that have 100% eligibility that can 100% play next year at the 5 spot. And if there are, I mean, they cost more than what what the production says they should cost. So, it's just there's not very many options at the 5 out there. That's what makes Dane even more important than, the talent that we saw at the end of last season. We know Dane's going to be a great player, but he's in my eyes, he's pretty much irreplaceable.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're not going to get anybody close to Dane's level in the portal. whether you know, it was at the beginning of portal season or not. There was just nobody even close in the portal that can. I mean, if Dane entered.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if we're operating on a hypothetical for a guy like Dane, 15 points per game, 8 rebounds per game, and didn't even start the entire season, if that was a guy who had a year of eligibility and got into the portal, like, what is the amount of money he would get? Because you just mentioned, like, the demand's high, the supply's low, and, you know, guards don't get as much on the open market. That's something we've been seeing since NIL has been a thing. Like, how much money would a guy like Dane Danger get if he had another year and he was on the open market?
So, it's funny you mentioned that. I was about to say, I was talking to his agency when he had one before they let him go, that whole debacle that happened. But, they said that he had multiple offers for $3 million ready for him if he hit the portal.
Right.
So it was 3 to 3.5 was the range I was told for Dane.
But if you have multiple, you can drive that up. Leverage is a hell of a drug.
Yeah, especially when you're the one. I was told, I mean, he was going to get around Yaxel, and Yaxel got up to 3.2 in Michigan, and he's, you know, obviously he's in the NBA draft right now. He has to withdraw from that. He's got a decision to make for Yaxel does, but I mean, he's going to get in that Yaxel range, 3 to 3.5. And his agency said he had multiple offers around 3. So,
yeah.
That was before he even hit the portal. So, I mean, they were doing some work for him.
Yep. So we'll see how that all plays out. Now, final thing I want to bring up, the Big Orange Caravan stopped through Memphis yesterday at the Botanic Garden, right around the corner from my house. But Parth Upadhyay from the Daily Memphian caught up with Rick Barnes and asked our favorite question about a Memphis and UT basketball game or a series or what have you in the out of conference. And before Parth even got through with his question, Rick Barnes reiterated what he said in the past. We haven't talked about that in a couple years. It's nowhere near being talked about now. Well, I mean, is this as insane to you as it is to me when it comes to this game, how much it means to the local fans, how much it means to the state of Tennessee, the historical significance of it? And it just feels like there's no forgive and forget in the UT, on the UT side of these things, this thing in particular. And Rick Barnes is so far away from even fielding those calls. And it feels like that, you know, that should be ancient history at this moment.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with that. I saw Parth's video, and I like John Martin's take on it. I was listening to him earlier today, but, I mean, he accurately said that he's holding a grudge that shouldn't be held. If we look at what Penny did in the non-con last year, who he scheduled, it's not like Memphis is. It's not like Memphis can't get these big teams to play. So I mean, anything that Rick would try to justify as to not playing Memphis, I mean, is immediately thrown out the window.
Right.
So, I mean, to me, it all comes back down to, you know, personal grudge against Penny. I mean, I don't know the full extent of that. I only know, you know, the comments that Penny made in
we know the bald fist and everything else.
Yeah.
The COVID game that was supposed to be played in Nashville. Like, we know about all that. That's four years ago. That's almost 5 years ago now.
Exactly. And we know Penny doesn't, you know, duck any smoke. I mean, he's working on a game with Alabama right now.
Right.
For next season. So, I mean, he and Nate Oates are really tight. You know, they're trying to get another elite non-con schedule going. So it's not like Memphis would say no to it. So it's really in the hands of Tennessee, and there's nothing to justify it other than a personal grudge. And I mean, I think that's foolish of Rick Barnes.
Well, and I get the complaint from UT fans. Like, I understand Memphis potentially needs this game more than Tennessee does, because Tennessee has the SEC. They can schedule big games. They don't need Memphis on the schedule as much as Memphis needs them in the out of conference. But at the same time, like, I looked up and down Tennessee's schedule last year. There's games against Western Carolina and, you know, schools of that ilk. You don't need those games either. So it's like, I don't know. I get that complaint, but I don't know how much weight it holds when you're playing 30 regular season games. You can make, if you lost to Memphis, you could make up for that with the SEC slate or whatever you have in your out of conference. It really is not that big of a deal. I don't know if that particular argument holds as much weight as they think it holds.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's not like it's college football, you know,
right?
Teams are all, they're not scheduling any power teams. I mean, Tennessee, Alabama, North Carolina, Kentucky, Gonzaga. I mean, outside of Tennessee, I mean, all those teams are scheduling tough opponents. I mean, Kentucky, I mean, they're working on a game with, I think, UCLA, right? UCLA. Yeah. I mean, they're working on all of these games that are tough games. They're not these bye games. You know, scheduling Memphis, people don't like really understand this, but, you know, when you schedule these bye games, I mean, you're dishing out at least 100K. And then, I mean, you could get creative with scheduling Memphis. You could play for NIL. You could play for charity. I mean, heck, you could run it through St. Jude's.
Yeah.
And, you know, run it for a good cause like that. So, I mean, there's a lot of angles you could take to scheduling this game, and it definitely needs to be back on the schedule.
Yeah, yeah. I miss it. I can say that. I think I speak for everybody in Memphis when I say I miss it. And honestly, I think if you gave truth serum to Tennessee fans, they would admit they might actually want this game, but that's beyond the point. But Hitman, I appreciate it, man. Great stuff as always. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good, man. Take care.
Yes, sir. He is Hitman Hoops. You can follow him on X at Hitman Hoops, Memphis basketball analyst, also dabbles in some national recruiting. One of the founders of Tiger Blueprint. Make sure you go follow all of his work. Again, follow him on X at Hitman Hoops. Got all the scoops on P.J. Haggerty, Memphis recruiting, and otherwise. Now, let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. And when we come back, I do want to hop into this conversation. The Big Orange Caravan stopped through Memphis at Botanic Garden. And Rick Barnes still not willing to play the Memphis and Tennessee game on the basketball court.